Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 23rd of November, Anno Domini 2013. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues.
But before we get into anything...
Mr. Butt to you, mister.
Okay, Mr. Soul. Paddle.
Apparently, I've had too much caffeine today. So.
Yes, you have.
We need to watch out.
Oh, boy. In other words, I should keep the dump button ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, we should, because she does so much here at the station, you know, and sometimes she's forgotten about. Not by us, of course.
Not by us.
But Laurel Ann's birthday is today.
Laurel Ann is the woman who keeps this place...
makes things happen.
Happen, yeah. She makes things happen.
And one of those unsung heroes that you don't hear too much about.
So we're singing about her today. Laurel Ann, Laurel Ann.
But happy birthday to her. And anybody else that sees her, please wish her a happy birthday.
Yep. All right, to the news. Samsung Electronics said on Tuesday its Galaxy Gear has become the world's most popular smartwatch. Not that that's a big category yet. With sales reaching 800,000 since its debut 2 months ago. Defying some market concerns the accessory would fail due to lack of compelling features. Samsung said Gear sales have been better than its own expectations, and it would expand sales promotions for the wearable device for the crucial year-end holiday sales. Samsung has poured marketing resources into the Gear with heavy advertisements and collaborations with fashion shows to seize leadership in the wearable computer market after the device got off to a rocky start after being critically panned by reviewers. Well-known tech reviewer David Pogue, who recently left the New York Times to start his own consumer tech website at Yahoo, described its design as inconsistent and frustrating and recommended nobody buy it, which shows you how many people actually listen to David Pogue. The product marks Samsung's latest attempt to prove that it is more than just a fast follower and innovation behind Apple. Apple is widely speculated by media and analysts to be working on wearable devices. Priced at around $300, the Gear works as an accessory to its market-leading Galaxy smartphone with a small OLED screen offering basic functions like photos, hands-free calls, and message notifications. Market expectations on the device have not been so strong, as it has only around 70 dedicated applications. UK retailer Phones For You offered the Gear for free to consumers buying the Galaxy Note 3 on contract earlier this month, while earlier media reports said the device was suffering some 30% rate of return in U.S. stores at Best Buy. It's the most sold wearable watch available on the marketplace, and we plan to expand its availability by expanding mobile devices that work with the Gear, Samsung said in a statement. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Samsung's Galaxy Gear smartwatch. And your choices are... I own one. I want one. Interesting idea. Meh. And can't wait for Apple to invent it. So far, we have 28 votes, and meh seems to be far and away the number one choice with 64% of the votes. Now, I know you will have more to say about this. So check out the forums down the right-hand column about... halfway on the fold, and you'll see fascinating stuff. The first link is to the forums, and the November 23rd, 2013 forum is Samsung's Galaxy Gear smartwatch. Let's get some talk going on there. And, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
That's all right. I'm getting pretty good at just about ripping my head off here.
Yeah, I noticed you were doing that. Try to leave it on for at least the show.
Well, my hand got caught in my headphones.
Sure.
So 800,000 in 2 months is good, apparently?
Well, considering what everybody said they would sell, which was approximately four.
Yeah.
800,000 is really kind of astonishing.
Yeah, Apple's last iPhone sold 10 million in the opening weekend.
Yeah, but you have to remember, most of them were sold to people who already owned iPhones.
Yeah.
This is a brand new category. It's a different sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. We're going back. We've all stopped wearing watches because our phone tells the time.
That's exactly right.
And you can set alarms to remind you.
Whatever. Right. Apple has, and deservedly so, they're a great product, blah, blah, blah. Don't write me. Apple has fanatics who will buy every single thing that comes out from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And there are millions of them. So if Apple puts out a toilet paper roll, they will sell millions of them.
When they
put out a watch, they will sell millions of them.
Because
the watch is good or bad, because people won't know that yet.
Right.
What they will know is that it's from Apple, so they will buy it.
Yep.
That I'm not saying that makes it a bad product. I'm just saying that's a reality of life. Samsung is not in that category at all. There's nobody out there desperately trolling the web for the next big Samsung product. So selling 800,000 of them is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and for a new product. I remember I had a Casio calculator chronograph when I was a kid.
Who did?
Yeah, really. Yeah.
And so that was sort of the first wearable computing. And then there was one that had a sensor in it and had a program on your computer, and it would flash your computer screen like a barcode reader. And you could program your watch with your appointments. So
that was the Microsoft, I forget what it was called, but the Microsoft watch.
No, I never had a Microsoft watch.
Well, they had that where you pointed it at the screen.
He cut his wrist off.
Well, yeah.
Bite your tongue.
Well, actually, no, speaking of Microsoft watches, the company that invented the motion detection that Microsoft uses in Kinect, they apparently went to Apple first to say, do you want to buy us? And Apple said no.
Right.
I didn't read today's news. Is this one of the stories?
Probably.
So now Apple is considering buying them for, you know, like double the money it was back then. So I get a kick out of that if Apple buys this company, it's an Israeli company, I can't remember the name of it, that Microsoft is going to have to pay Apple a licensing fee for every Kinect sold.
Yeah.
You know,
we've sort of expected that because the laptops have cameras built in, that instead of going to the expense of a touch screen on a laptop, which can be expensive, you do gestures in front of the screen like the Kinect does, or the PlayStation has one, the Sony Move. So, you know, if you want to change pages, you just swipe in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we haven't seen that.
One other thing we're going to have to talk about this week, because it just seems, I don't know whether it's you know, or me, but you guys, just seems like the holidays have jumped on me real fast. And to think that this week is Black Friday. This coming week is Black Friday, along with Thanksgiving. And what are folks going to want to get? You know, a lot of the Black Friday, you know, it seems like right now they're saying LCD TVs are going to be one of the cheapest things out there.
As they keep dropping down. Oh, yeah. Now, last year it was 50 inches for $500. Now we're seeing the 120 hertz and more HDMI inputs in that $500.
Yeah, they're the
range.
Same size screen, but the features.
More.
Yeah, the features on it, the hertz and everything else, more DMI connections on it. And
that's the one thing that I'm missing on mine.
DMI?
Only have two DMIs.
Oh.
And that's kind of bothering me at this point.
Might have to upgrade.
Well, so your TV must be what, 5 years old?
No, it's less than a year old.
Really?
It was a gift, and it was so I'm not kidding.
Generally speaking, the only thing you plugged into it was your cable box and your Blu-ray player.
Right.
But now we've got the game consoles and the set-top boxes like Roku and Apple TV, laptops now. Although with the set-top boxes, you can do that wirelessly and not need a wire to your computer. Right.
Yep. Well, and in addition now, I can, if I want to watch YouTube on my television, I can actually control that from my tablet or my phone or my computer and hit the little button and whap, it goes over to my
television. But hooking it up directly to the HDMI is a lot faster, though. Granted, you can do it wirelessly, and that's okay.
No, this comes right through.
No, I was talking about what he's doing.
Yeah, wired is always
better.
Well, various definitions of better.
Right.
Yeah, wired is usually faster and more efficient. Wireless is more convenient.
Right.
And many of us, you know, side on convenience.
Mm-hmm. All right. I am apparently not being able to log in because YouTube is not responding. I don't know why YouTube has to respond to...
I think it's all part of this Google consolidation
mess.
Did
you say please?
Apparently I did. I did not say please enough. And that's a problem. Here I am. I'm just trying to log on to Google Drive. Mm-hmm. And it's not logging in because apparently YouTube, I don't have anything to do on YouTube. I'm trying to...
You're doing your Hangout Live on the air, aren't you?
I am, but that's still connected.
Yeah.
People are listening. Are you people listening? Are we hearing people? Are you still there? Has everybody frozen?
But Google has done some a little annoying things recently. They've been merging all of their properties together. So one account sign-in gives you Google Drive and Google Mail and Google Search and Google YouTube and Google everything else.
Google YouTube.
Google Wallet. Google Play. We had a customer this week asking us, you know, why is it asking me to pay money to Google? I just want to do a search. So, well, no, that's the Google Play subscription service. You don't have to pay money to it, but it doesn't look like he's used to.
Yeah.
Right.
For several months, Google was putting that, we're putting something new in your toolbar, that little checker square box.
Yeah.
Not now. And now that
it's there. Now
it's there
and forget it.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, and that's actually, I suppose, less useful because now it's two clicks instead of one, but you get that much a little bit more
real but
estate.
You know what? Like, for me, Kathy had it, so her Google, there was the icons right below it.
Yeah.
You know, and they were there. And now because they changed it to that little cube, they're not there. It
doesn't fit anymore.
And she goes, well, I want them back.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, we get calls.
They can't go that way. Did they do a dumb thing like that?
Every time Yahoo would change their mail interface or their front page, we got a lot of tech calls. You know, my computer's broken is how it starts.
Yeah,
because the page looks different. Make it back to the old way. Yeah. All right, I'll call Yahoo and get right on that.
Yeah, let me know how they get that. But yeah, and you know, a number of other folks too. It was always there. I could just go below Google and just click on one of those, and it took me to this or that or that. And now they got this other. I don't want that. I want it back. Sorry, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Can't change it.
Absolutely. In the long run, I suppose. You know, there a woman who used to work for RIT for the Saunders College where I was. She said they were making all kinds of changes to the curriculum and all kinds of changes to everything else. And everybody was complaining, and everybody was students were insanely angry about it. And she said the smartest thing I've ever heard. She said, you know, at most, this is a problem for 4 years. So at the end of those 4 years, there won't be anybody here who remembers the old way.
Probably that long nowadays.
Yeah, well, and you know, going from quarters to semesters, whenever they try to go back.
That was a separate issue.
Right, but that's the most recent upheaval. And when if you ever try to go back to quarters, people are going to say, oh, what's wrong with semesters? They've been working fine. Well, no, we used to do quarters.
We used to do quarters, and right now everybody likes them better because that's what they know.
Yeah.
I remember when they went the other way.
Yeah.
When I was getting back to school.
They've switched back and forth before?
Yes.
The semesters to quarters to semesters to quarters?
Yes.
Semesters to quarters to semesters.
Yeah. Matter of fact, when I first started at RIT, we were still downtown. I took a couple art courses downtown, still in the over there on the Plymouth Avenue campus over there.
Yep.
First couple of courses, and then it was really something. I remember it was a year later, they moved out to the new campus.
Yeah.
And I went out there for a winter quarter, and I had my old 64 Volkswagen.
Ah, what a great car.
And had to go trudge it out there. The little bug, though, she hauled through the snow and got out there. First night of class, they canceled it.
Nah.
It was snowy.
They don't cancel classes anymore. I have horror stories. They don't cancel classes.
What's funny is it's always the people who live the farthest away always make it through the snow.
Yeah. Well, I had a Volkswagen myself, and it never stopped for anything. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Lee from Hilton on the line, I think. And he's been very patient waiting. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
There, it's back.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, I just want to remind everybody it is the day of the doctor. So our next caller, our first caller, is Lee from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Lee. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Okay. I'm running into an interesting issue. When I bring up, I have a PC, and when I bring up iTunes, I purchased a new CD this week, and I wanted to sync it with my iPod Touch, and now iTunes does not recognize the iPod Touch. I can see it in Windows Explorer, so it's attached to, you know, the computer itself sees it. So I did a little bit of looking online, and the one thing I found was to reset the iPod service in my Windows services. I did that, still nothing. So I was wondering if Steve or if either of the other two guys here had an answer.
Well, one of the tips, as I'm bringing up TechNote here, is to uninstall and reinstall iTunes. How new is that? Doesn't affect your music at all. It's just the iTunes application itself.
Will it automatically go out and recognize all my installed songs already?
Yeah. The music folder itself is in your documents folder.
Yes.
And the application looks in there. So even when you remove the application, that won't do anything.
Okay.
To your music. There is a tech note that I can post in a minute. There's an iPod troubleshooting assistant that you can download.
Okay.
And let's see, this is all the Windows version. So there's similar tips for Mac versus Windows. How old of an iPod is it?
Like I said, it's an iPod Touch. I think I got it maybe 2 years ago.
Okay, so it's fairly new. One of the problems I've got a second-gen Touch, and I'm stuck at OS 3, and now they're on 7, and I can't upgrade because it's so old.
Oh, I haven't upgraded the OS on this. I upgraded the OS on my... I do have a Mac. I broke down and got one this past summer. I stepped over to the dark side. And since this was already formatted for PCs, I didn't bother moving the music over to that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I will. I'll try upgrading the operating system, and maybe that'll help. I didn't even think of that.
You could try plugging it into your Mac and see if the Mac sees it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it asks if you want to erase it to sync to that Mac, say no.
Yeah.
but just see if it sees it or not.
Okay.
But yeah, I've got a link posting from Apple on different things to try. But the iPod sync services and reinstalling iTunes are a couple of the big ones.
Okay. Yeah. Like I was my main concern was I've had an iPod for. For 10 years now, some version of an iPod. Between it and the Kindle, they're the two greatest inventions in history because I travel a lot for work, and I can carry my music, and I can carry books with me without breaking my back.
Yep.
So this music library has moved from PC to PC. But it seems like every time I get a new version of iTunes, it becomes more difficult to import music. Isn't as obvious as it seems. It isn't as intuitively obvious as it was back 10 years ago.
Yeah, and in the early days, it was the expectation was you stick a CD in and it rips the CD.
Mm-hmm.
Now the expectation is you're buying it online.
Yes.
There's still an import button in iTunes in the file menu, or what's almost counterintuitive is you just drag the music folder into the iTunes window. And that will import it that way.
I don't think I've tried that. If I run into issues, I will give that a try.
Yeah, it's almost too easy. You just drag, you stick your disc in or wherever you downloaded the music from, just drag it into the iTunes window, and that'll import it too.
Yeah. No, I mean, getting music into it isn't an issue. When I plugged in the CD, it popped up and said, do you want to import this music? Yes. And whenever I, and usually when I buy something, I do tend to buy it from the iTunes store. So I buy something online, so it automatically gets put into it. So that's yep. really good. But the what I run into is when I change PCs, or what I was fearing if I had to uninstall this version of iTunes and then reinstall, would I run into that same issue? But I'll try, if it doesn't find it automatically, I'll drag and drop it.
Yep.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I appreciate the help.
No
Thanks.
Problem.
Very good.
And I completely agree about the e-reader. I bought my daughter a Nexus 7.
Hello?
Because, and instead of a Kindle or a Nook or whatever, because while general books are available everywhere, textbooks often are only available in one place.
Right.
And I didn't, and that was the point of this, and so I didn't want her to miss them. So she can have a Kindle app and a Nook app and a couple of dozen other apps, all of which can read various types of books. So, I agree. Instead of a backpack with 50, instead of a backpack with 50 or 60 books in it, she just carries the Nexus 7, and she's in good shape. All right. Apparently, our next caller is Gordon from Palm Desert, California. Seriously?
Seriously.
God love you. Welcome. Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. How are things in Palm Desert?
I'm from Rochester. We come to California every winter. And that's
Can
where
I, you
are, are
you
now.
Adopting?
I took your advice years ago and went to Mozilla Firefox and Thunderbird for my email provider and Time Warner in Rochester. Put our vacation hold on our account when we left the 1st of November. On the 7th of November, I could no longer get email through Thunderbird. I get it through the webmail, but I don't get it through Thunderbird. I spent an hour and a half talking to Time Warner people, and I don't have anything. They blame it all on Thunderbird.
Of course they will.
Are you getting an error message of any kind? Are you getting an error message of any kind when you try to get your mail?
I do. I get a message, password did not succeed. Pop server responded invalid username or password. I usually didn't have to insert a password.
The computer remembers it for you.
I insert my password. It says password not accepted. And do I want to try another one? I tried one that I used years ago. It doesn't work either.
Yeah, because you're at a different service provider.
To, a lot of times when you do something
inbound
like that, they say, give us another email address and we'll send you, a password.
What we've seen quite frequently, actually, with several of the mail providers, is that invalid password seems to be the last message in the list of lists of errors. So that the error is not that your username and password is wrong; it's just they don't have any other error to tell you. What I might be worried about, but it shouldn't happen, is that because you're on vacation hold, they denied you access to the POP server. But you can still access the webmail server.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Is, because of the PopNet, sometimes they will block it. And
from the other way, what internet service are you on now in California? And they may be blocking, shouldn't. They may be blocking access to anyone else's internet.
Exactly.
So if you're on Comcast now, you can Comcast
the
internet.
I'm on Time Warner now. And
still Time Warner in California.
I've been on the same Time Warner for the last 4 years. And I've never had a problem before.
So, they've changed something, though.
Yeah, either your password has changed, but you can log in via the web using the same username and password, right?
I'm using the same username and password, right?
Yeah. One thing you can try in Thunderbird is to make a new account and set it up new and see if the new account works.
Yeah, I was wondering if I could use like Revo Uninstaller and completely uninstall Thunderbird and reinstall it. Would that?
Well, you certainly could do that. However, you're logging in. You're not getting a message that says corrupted profile or folder issue or any of that stuff. So
yeah.
I don't know that necessarily that's going to help you at
the
all.
The error message is wrong because your username and password is not incorrect, which is the problem.
But you're right. It may well be that what's happening is somehow they've shut off his POP server access.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you ask them? I'm afraid that you're going to have to call them back again, and I know how convenient that is.
What a pleasure.
But let me suggest that you call them back and ask them specifically to remove the hold on the POP account. Don't even give them any of your issues or problems or anything. Just call up and say, hi, blah, 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 this is me, blah, blah, blah. I have a hold. I have a vacation hold on my account. Could you please remove it for POP only?
Okay.
And just make the assumption that they've held it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Outgoing server too?
Yes, incoming and outgoing. Just
POP
remove
SMTP is outgoing.
Right. Yeah. POP and SMTP. Have them just tell them I want you to remove the hold on those two things. Leave the hold on your modem or whatever, but remove the hold on the POP account and the SMTP.
Another thing to check is in your account settings, see if SSL got turned on. When you connect to your mail server, one of the options is called SSL. Roadrunner here in Rochester does not use SSL, but maybe in California they do. Although it's an option that you can turn on or off, and it changes how the connection to the server works. And so if SSL is on and it shouldn't be, then you're going to get an error message that it can't talk to the server properly, which should be different.
Where do I find that?
In the account settings in Thunderbird. There's usually
for your account itself.
It may say use secure connection. It may not say use SSL.
That's under security?
It could be, yes. I don't have Thunderbird handy, so I can't find it exactly.
Okay.
But yes, so if it's on, turn it off. If it's off, turn it on. And so reverse it and see if that works.
Yep.
Okay, great.
It's under server settings. It's under server settings and under the server settings for POP mail, for your POP mail server. I think it's the second set of stuff down. It says security settings and connection security. Excuse me. Connection security.
Have some more coffee.
Should be, apparently I need it, should be none, and uncheck use secure authentication.
Otherwise, you know what we suggest? No.
What?
No, leave a round trip ticket at the airport.
That's right, and we'll be there.
We will come out and personally take care of it.
Because we're looking at
smooth. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we got this white stuff falling outside right now, and, you know, to see some palm trees wouldn't be bad.
Oh, yeah, picked a few tangerines this morning and some Meyer lemons. My wife's going to make a nice lemon pie.
Nice. Shut up, Liv. Just
go get a sunburn.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thank you, Gordon. Have fun out there and don't sunburn.
Yep.
Poor guy. He could just get terribly sunburned. Google has gone Doctor Who crazy.
Yep.
Very nice. I like to see it.
50th anniversary.
Everybody is making things more secure, which is great. But for people who've never used security, it means they have some fixes to unfix unfixes to fix, or however you want to put that. This is also one of the reasons we tend to recommend using a non-internet service provider email address. First, it makes it easier to change your service provider. But secondly, it means that if you, for example, put a hold, a vacation hold on your service, it doesn't affect your mail in any way because that's not part of the service. So that's the kind of thing that we often talk about.
And one of the nice things about the big services like Gmail and Yahoo and even Apple's iCloud service, you can tell it to pick up your mail from another account. So you can get a Gmail address that's now not tied to an internet provider and say, oh yeah, by the way, pick up my Roadrunner mail and show it to me in my Gmail inbox. And that's a way to work around Roadrunner's lack of IMAP service so that you can synchronize your mail between your devices. One of the disadvantages of Pop is it's different on every device.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. You used the S word, and you didn't use the dump button.
I know.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
I should have. 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
As long as I don't have to shovel it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's all I care about.
Well, that's one thing I had to do this week. That's pretty pathetic.
Get your snowblower out?
I had to put the stabilizer in the bike.
Yeah.
Move it to the back of the garage. Pulled the tractor out, got that all ready, greased up, and ready to go. It's like, no.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with a friend this week and asked him if he put his Mustang away yet. Oh, I did that in October.
I have to
He's
say.
He's really paranoid about his Mustang.
It's the 23rd of November, and we're just getting snow.
Yeah.
So, really, you can't complain that much.
No. But it looks like I'm just looking at this forecast here. And they're saying Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday snow. Not much.
As long as it's the light, fluffy snow that's pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the idiots won't remember how to drive in it.
Well, that's the big thing. Once I get home from here, I'm done that's for the day. Maybe
before,
the weekend.
Before we do go to the phone. Now, what are you guys doing for Thanksgiving? You sticking around here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We have... Oh, no, go ahead and finish.
Well, I was just going to say we're heading over to my father-in-law's family from all over the country. Will be showing up. It's going to be a fun time.
Mm-hmm. We've got a little, well, I don't know about traumatic. It might not be quite the right word. My stepdaughter's fiancé's family has invited us over. And there's going to be like 20 of them because his cousin is getting married a couple of months ahead of my stepdaughter. So they're spoiling the thunder. So I joked that she should get pregnant first.
No,
because my sister-in-law's sister did that when my brother and sister-in-law were getting married. Her sister beat them to the punch and stole all of them, and then they were going to have a baby. And her sister had one a couple of months earlier and beat them to the punch. So yeah, so we're going to go visit them, and so I got to bring all my family along to see if we're going to be outnumbered about 2-1.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm kind of hoping that the snow does hold off like a lot of other folks. Kathy and I are going up to her sister's house in Syracuse. So, you know, I mean, for me, it's no biggie driving in the snow and that, but there's a lot of folks that have to go driving longer distance and that, and you hope it's going to be decent for them so they can have a safe.
I wonder if your fiance's sister knows my birth mother's boyfriend's, who's from Syracuse.
Why don't we save that for the break? We're going to go back to the phones.
Everyone in Syracuse knows everybody else in Syracuse, right?
Exactly. Walter from Greece. Welcome, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yes. I don't know who the gentlemen are you're talking to, though.
Hello?
Hi there, what's up?
Okay, wishing everybody there, again, a happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
I want to pose the question first and then give you some background, okay?
Sure.
Okay, is it true that there are certain older laptop computers that you cannot load Linux onto? The reason, here's the background now. I have a friend who has a Compaq Presario 2100 running XP Home Edition. Of course, XP is going to be going, so I said, well, heck, I can go ahead and load on a version of Ubuntu on there, some Ubuntu or some derivative of some sort. Tried to put in the live CDs of some current ones. It reads the CD reader, sees it. It does the countdown and then stalls at 1 second. It stops. If you touch a key to try to move down or anything, it stalls immediately. I then worked backwards. I have older editions of Ubuntu, and I also did Puppy Linux. Puppy Linux will boot. An older edition of Ubuntu. I think I had to go back. The most recent one I could use was 8.04. Could work. Looking on the internet, people said, yeah, this, especially this Compaq, are ahead of the list, that they load in so much proprietary software, and they go in and they've changed the done something to the hard drive that you can't put anything in, any form of Linux. Because it's interesting, I can't read anything beyond 2000 and, I believe, 6 that anybody has ever tried to put anything onto a compact laptop.
How much RAM does it have in it?
960 mega of RAM. It's 1.99 gigahertz Celeron processor.
Here's the deal. Yes, Compaq had an entire series, and I can't remember off the top of my head if the Pizarro 2100 was one of them, but Compaq had a whole series of computers that were cheap because most of the drivers were built into Windows. Instead of having ROM do most of the stuff, they loaded it in as a driver to Windows, which meant that they had a little bit cheaper hardware at the expense of a little bit longer load to boot. Who cared? Nobody cared at that point. Yeah. But I have seen a Presario 2100 with Ubuntu on it, but you're right, it was an older version. Yeah. I would suggest trying damn small Linux because you don't have even a gig of RAM, although any one of them should run.
Right. Yeah, I've been successful with other ones. I think I have a Dell, and I just have a little over a gig of RAM, and it runs just fine with a Linux Lite. Just does a great job.
Right.
But again, that was one of my tries too. The Linux Lite, Zorin Lite, nothing. It just stalled, dropped dead. And you know what you're saying makes sense
because
when I went to the XP to defrag, see if I can get everything just nice and tight, I found a section of the hard drive that's not movable. And I read some other people claim that that's a compact file area that's not movable. And in fact, when they tried loading, did some Linux operations, they had to essentially cut the partition off the hard drive such that they left room. They didn't touch this part. If you had a 60 gig hard drive, you had to leave 30 gig because Compaq put this software in there, and they claim that's what's killing it, that you can't get at it.
Right.
Some weird format, not straight NTFS formatted drive.
Well, more importantly, that's where essentially the ROM is.
Yeah.
Instead of putting the ROM on the board, they put the ROM in that area of the hard drive, which makes the machine slower, certainly,
yeah,
but a little bit cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. So this way, then, I've just basically given up because, as I said, I can only see Puppy Linux, and I don't want to have her use Puppy Linux. That's too much diddling around. I've used that, and it's too much diddling around for her, that's why I thought Linux Lite would be helpful, or Zorin, but it looks like they're just not going to be compatible.
Right. Well, two things I might suggest you try.
Okay.
One is damn small Linux.
Okay.
The second is look at an older distribution of something like Xubuntu.
Okay.
Because you can set that up to look very much like Windows or a Mac or anything you want it to look like.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's one problem that there is, too. I wanted to use Gparted to access. It won't boot Gparted. So I couldn't even get in there to partition the disk. I had to go into XP in order to see what the disk was like.
Yeah, it's very possible that part of what the problem is the drive controller, the ROM for the drive controller.
Pull the hard drive out and put another drive in. Get a cheap small drive online.
It's motherboard ROM parts are not in the motherboard.
Yeah, anymore. And I've heard, and even then when I was looking at things, people were swearing up and down because, fine, you could load in something, but there's all proprietary hardware for the sound card. There's proprietary hardware for a lot of things that are on there. Yep. And so they said, forget it. That's why I didn't see anything. That's why I believe I didn't see anything beyond 2006 that anybody tried.
This from 2010. They said he got Peppermint running. I'm assuming Peppermint's a Linux distro.
It's part of Linux Mint.
Yeah, but what day? I think I read that same email, but isn't that, again, somebody posted that back in about 2006 or 2005?
Well, this one says July 6, 2010.
Hmm, okay.
That's when I joined.
Oh, joined. Posted. Posted July 20th, 2010. A long string of CD installs failed. I got Peppermint out of the box. Working.
Peppermint 404.
Peppermint 404.
4.0.4. That's fairly old. That's 2000. That's a 2010 version. I'm sure you can still find it on the web.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could. That
doesn't have wireless or audio working yet, but
yeah, that's the problem right there again.
And again, that's part of the problem. Those are all proprietary ROM. I guess you can't call them ROMs because they're on the hard drive. But
right.
that's the problem. They don't have ROM. It all comes off the hard drive.
Yeah. Well, to me, it sounds like this is going to be a nice doorstop.
It may well be, and it's a laptop, so you can't even turn it into an aquarium.
Get a Chromebox for $250.
Well, there's that. Absolutely.
Yeah, but there's the intellectual exercise. I want this to work, and by golly, it's gone.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, I know somebody else that I can, that I bought a used laptop, and in fact, it's that Dell, and it just runs beautifully. It's a Dell 610,
yeah.
whatever. Model whatever it is, but it was a Dell 610 and it runs beautifully. But
many old computers run great on Linux. I mean, they're faster, they're much more responsive, better all the way around, but there are just those models that don't do it.
Yep, and this is one of them. Thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you very, very much.
All right, have fun.
Okay.
Yeah, It made sense at the time. Your choices were, on the PC side, were pretty much Windows or not much.
Yep.
And so let's save a few bucks in hardware by putting all that stuff in software. It's going to make the machine a little slower, but so what? You're saving money, so it takes an extra half a second to do something. Nobody's going to really notice that anyway, because in those days the machines were so slow, what difference did it make?
Yep.
And I get that. I do.
And around those same early days, the Mac ROMs were sort of the sought after thing. That, you know, the computer itself was kind of generic hardware, you know, all custom built and custom designed, but the ROMs were the key. And so there were several clone companies that made clone Macintosh computers. You just had to acquire the ROMs from somewhere else, usually another Macintosh computer.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, and I know several people who did that. They had old Macs that were broken in some way. They could buy a clone for much cheaper.
Yep.
And throw the old ROMs in there, and you were done.
That's how some of the virtualization simulation apps run today. If you need to run an OS, you know, 1, OS 2 application, people have taken that ROM code and put it on a electronic file. And so I've saw a web browser that would boot OS 6, I think it was. They recreated the entire original Macintosh 30 years ago as a web app. And all you need to do is apply the ROMs.
I'll tell you what, virtualization is really where it is. You can create... I have a desktop that's got a lot of RAM and a decent set of processors. And I'm thinking of just turning that into a virtual box where I can run 2, 3, four other operating systems simultaneously, switch among them to do different things. It's a great idea. You need a lot of RAM. You need a lot of quad-core processor at the least. But
because those other systems don't take as much, but that's where you're able to then, like you said, do 3 or 4 different OSs.
I'd love to be able to run both Windows and Linux here.
That'd be sweet.
Here's a guy that
it's never going to happen. On this machine,
I know.
Here's a guy that made a 1/3 scale original Macintosh with a Raspberry Pi.
Oh, I love the Raspberry Pi. They're putting Wolfram Mathematica on Raspberry Pis.
Holy cow.
Yes. Yes. And they're talking about making it part of the operating system. So it's built into the ROM itself.
Gee.
Holy cow indeed. All right. That music tells me that you have wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. And for those of you who do not learn from history, you get to do it all again on the other side of the little break that's coming up now. We'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you're continuing to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You can be part of the fun at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Join us on the Ustream. Join us on YouTube. Join us on the audio stream. Just join us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes right here on the truly great and truly
member-supported
Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC.
Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
You're a real pain in my butt sometimes. You know that?
Yes, yes, I am, and proudly so. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of Sound Bites. I love this news story. LG... Oh, we have somebody in line? That's all right. We'll do this first, then we'll talk to Sal. LG has admitted it continued collecting data on viewing habits even after users had activated a privacy setting designed to prevent it. LG makes televisions which gather data on your viewing habits, and they continue to do so even after they updated their televisions so that you could turn that feature off. The television maker has apologized to its customers and said it would issue an update to correct the problem that it updated to correct the problem already. Viewing information helps manufacturers deliver relevant advertising and program recommendations. We have verified that even when this function is turned off by the viewers, it continues to transmit viewing information. We verified that, like we didn't know. Although the data are not retained, or the data is not retained by the server, LG said in a grammatically incorrect statement. A firmware update is being prepared for immediate rollout that will correct this problem on all affected LG smart TVs. So when this feature is disabled, no data will be transmitted. So they're going to make the disable button actually work. Since the issue became public, it has also emerged that Sony's PlayStation collects data from every Blu-ray disc that is played. Samsung, the world's largest TV maker, has yet to respond to any questions about its operation. LG stressed that the information gathered was not personal, but viewing information only. This information is collected as part of the smart TV platform to deliver more relevant advertisements and to offer recommendations to viewers based on what other LG smart TV owners are watching, they said. So do you own an LG TV? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, just like Sal did from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's up?
Hey, guys. Hey, going back to a couple callers ago with iTunes,
yes.
Just a suggestion. Sometimes if you just keep the iPod plugged into the computer and you just shut the iTunes down and restart it, sometimes that kind of helps and they'll recognize the iPod for some strange reason.
Yeah, just leave iTunes running for 10, 15 minutes beyond what you think it's not working, and then it starts working.
Right, but sometimes just shutting it off and then keeping the iPod plugged into the computer and starting it up, and it finds it.
Yeah, that's a good...
I've had it happen even on my Mac. It's just something goofy sometimes.
Huh. Yeah. Thanks.
Sure.
That's great.
Something simple like that, maybe.
Neat. Yeah, thank you. There's always that trade-off. Is it taking a long time, or is it not going to work?
Oh, yes, yes.
And just 5 seconds before it would have worked, you decide it's not working and stop.
Yep. I had that problem with an app yesterday. It was waiting for something, probably YouTube again. And just as I reached for the mouse to shut that thing down, boom, it worked. It was great. Well, thanks a lot, Sal. I'm sure Lee is still listening, because why wouldn't he be?
Yep.
That's exactly right.
The other option, too, he said he had bought most of his songs from the iTunes store. If it's the iPod Touch, you can just re-download those in iTunes in the cloud. So you don't have to sync to a computer anymore. Apple started doing that a couple of OS versions ago.
Well, but if he has the old version, if he's still on an older version of the OS.
Yeah, it wouldn't have iTunes in the cloud yet. But yeah, Apple started doing that a couple of versions ago, is the iPods and iPads and iPhones can be handled independently and don't require a computer to sync anymore. You can sync them to your computer, Mac or Windows, but they don't require a computer like they used to.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Vic. What's up?
Excuse me. When I try to install a VAST on my Windows 7 desktop, I double-click on it, and it just starts to get going, and then it stops, and nothing happens. So I try to do AVG. AVG looks like it will download, but I stopped it because I guess I kind of wanted to do a VAST first. Is there any reason why a VAST won't even install at all, period? I mean, I shut off my firewall. I shut off Microsoft Security Essentials, Malwarebytes, SuperNAS spyware. I shut everything off, and hoping that this way there won't be any interference, but it still won't do anything.
But maybe that you were already infected with something, and therefore it's preventing a VAST from loading.
Oh.
Or it could have been a bad download. You could try downloading it again.
Right. I did. I tried from Major Geeks, CNET, download.com, Avast itself, and nothing.
Yeah. I would suggest that it's likely you have already been infected with something that's preventing Avast from loading.
Okay, but now AVG, there's no problem.
Well, many of them don't catch everything. So okay. If you can load AVG and clean your system, maybe then you can load Avast.
Is there much of a... I mean, you guys tout both of those. Is there much of a difference between either one of them?
I like both of them. It really, you know, mocks Nick's six of one, half dozen of the other.
Okay, I'm tired of Microsoft Security Essentials because I tried for a month to download and install a security update and nothing. It just keeps failing no matter what I do.
That's a whole problem with Microsoft, and that's why I have told folks for years. Microsoft is great about rolling something out, getting you to try it, and then they bail. They don't support it. Right. There have been too many products that they try to get their fingers into everything else, and they do a half-butt job of doing it. And, you know,
and we were all very surprised when Microsoft Essentials first rolled out. They were actually excellent.
Yes.
Given you know, the state at the time, they mm-hmm. were excellent, but they just didn't keep up.
Yeah, that's a whole trouble. Like anything else. What was it? Microsoft Money. They got people to go over to that. They bailed. Sorry, not enough folks interested. You know, and if it's not making them billions for Gates, they don't stick with it.
But then the weird thing is, on the other side, they'll release a crappy version of a program 1 year, and then the next year it'll be a little better and a little better, and after 3 or 4 years of crap, it finally works out right.
Well, it depends on them.
The last big one was Windows.
Yeah.
Windows 1, 2, and 3 were all pretty well much crap.
Well, but it depends on how strategic that product is to them. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Windows, Office, those things, super important to them. SharePoint, mm-hmm. Things like that, a lot of their business software,
yeah.
Super important to them. But you're right. Things like Microsoft Money would have been a nice idea had a billion people jumped on it immediately. They'd have kept it up, but it didn't match it.
But no, you're right, Victor. It's very disappointing that you know they bring something out, but again, they don't stand behind it or you know support it that well.
Well, Dave, yeah. Now is a proper way to install. It looks like I'm going to have to do AVG, but should I install it first and then get rid of MSC? Or
no, go ahead and get rid of the MSC.
First? Before I even install?
Yeah, because you don't want two conflicting.
Right. Okay. You want to download it first. But
yeah,
then
download it, get
it
ready
one.
To install. Just
right.
Don't do the install. Have it there on your desktop as an icon to install. So the minute one uninstalls, boom. You know, it's a matter of seconds, you're putting on a new one.
Okay. Good, I'll do that then. All right, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, we find that many of the, we've talked about this before, many of the virus writers don't even release their viruses until they can beat the big three, Norton, McAfee, Trend Micro.
What's your name?
But in terms of the little ones, the so-called little ones, which often do a better job because they're lesser known, AVG, Avast, Panda, Kaspersky, although that's getting up there. We find that often those will work when the other ones do not. So that's a possibility. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I have an older iPad.
and I'm not too good with computers, and I want to get on PayPal. How do I do that?
Well, two ways. You could open the Safari browser on the iPad and go to PayPal.com, or you could go to the App Store on the iPad and download the PayPal app for iPad. That's probably the better way to do it.
Oh, okay.
So once you download, then you have to sign up for PayPal.
Okay.
So when it first launches, it's going to ask you to put in your PayPal account name or make a new one.
Right.
So if you don't have a PayPal account already, that will make one for you.
Oh, I see. Is there any other than PayPal that you recommend?
Google Wallet does very similar things to PayPal. Especially
as do Stripe and Square.
Well, are you looking to receive payments or to make payments?
To make payments.
Yeah.
The big one is PayPal. Almost everybody accepts PayPal.
And many other companies are now starting to do Amazon payments, so it can go through your Amazon account. So you'll be at some website, and there'll be a Pay with PayPal button, or a Pay with Amazon button, or a Pay with Google button. Those are sort of the big three.
Oh, I see. So once I get to the App Store and do PayPal on the App Store, they'll ask me a bunch of questions?
Yeah, they'll want to know your name and your information and your credit card number and all that other stuff.
Okay, and that's secure?
Yes, the PayPal app is secure.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck, Steve.
Right.
Yeah, lots of people are paying now with PayPal. Lots of people are paying with the Google Wallet. Lots of people are paying with Amazon.
And many of the companies have started giving away credit card readers. So you can accept payments into your PayPal account or your Amazon account. Now we're talking about Microsoft Money. No one can compete against Intuit very easily with Quicken. They have a credit card reader too, and that's really neat for like garage sales. People can pay you with a credit card. If you're a private contractor, house painter, anything.
Wherever you are.
You want people to give you money? you can have a free reader and accept credit card payments and raise your rates so people don't have to carry cash.
And right, last time there was a Girl Scout
yep.
cookie thing. Dennis Worcester was here, and I ordered a bunch of.
Damn you, Dennis Worcester. And your Girl Scout.
You're right.
30 bucks, I can't get away with
doing
it.
That, yeah. I know, no kidding. And he had it right on his iPad, swiped my card with his Square. Boom, 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 there it was. I got a receipt in the mail. It was very funny.
Yep.
It was very funny. I thought, you're right, you can't get away now.
Yeah. Oh, I don't have cash with me. How about a credit card? I can take that too.
Yeah.
And with Square, because that's the one I'm most familiar with, it's a flat 2.75% fee. There's no swipe fee. There's no monthly fee. For people that have a merchant account at their business to accept credit cards, there's fees up the wazoo. You pay a fee for every transaction. You pay a fee for swiping. You pay a daily fee. There's a monthly fee. There's a rental fee for the stupid machine.
Yep.
We joke at our store that the merchant account makes more money than we do. In fact, New York State gets 8%, the merchant companies get 4%, and we're lucky if we get 2%. Everyone else makes more money than we do on a sale.
But PayPal, Stripe, Google Wallet take less than the merchant accounts.
Right. So and you don't have to fill out this horrible credit form to get approved for a merchant account.
And that's where one thing, I know whether you guys do it. But when it comes to folks using their credit card, whether you ask for credit or debit,
debit is
cheaper. When you come into the business and you have a debit, use a debit card for the business because it helps.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because it costs. These folks that get the rewards and everything else on their cards, what they don't realize is every merchant out there is paying for their rewards.
Yeah, that 2%.
The banks don't do it.
That 2% Discover gives you back, they took that 2% from us.
Yeah. And every other merchant around there. The banks aren't losing a cent. They pass that on to all the merchants, so the merchants are paying for your extra miles to travel, that cash back, the rewards program, and everything else are the higher fees that these companies have to charge because they're paying for those reward programs.
I've even found that at some of the gas stations where they have cash and credit price differences, using a debit card counts as cash.
Yep.
So you get the lower price.
All right, we are going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Al from Rochester will be on the line, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sorry, I'm not ready for this stuff.
Jazz 91.
90.1.
Jazz 90.1 would like to say that the opinions expressed by Dave Enright are not the
majority of the Russian out
its
there
members,
not necessarily
its listeners, or any right-thinking human being. Welcome back, everybody. It's 25
Wait
minutes after the hour, and for the next few minutes at least, we're still on Jazz 90.1 with Soundbites.
Hey, I didn't swear. I didn't say. I just said my opinion. And I'll stick to it because a lot of other folks are sitting there saying, darn right.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
And it's,
back to the, what?
Like I say, it's starting to accumulate. That's getting worse.
That's the bad part. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Al. What's up?
Hey, guys. Well, other than I just 2 minutes ago made an appointment to go to Ron Quite to pick up some used snow tires from a guy for my car. Yeah, everything's seasonal, right?
Exactly.
Hey, reason I'm calling is a month or two ago, you guys mentioned Freedom Pop as an alternative source for low-end cell phone, smartphones, et cetera. And I wanted to let you know that I went out and got one.
Nice.
And it's interesting. For those of you who are looking for a inexpensive smartphone and don't want to get creamed with a heavy data plan set up every month, it may be something to look at.
Nice.
The basics are, for $100, you, and this is a beta program, by the way,
right,
but right now, for $100, you get a HTC phone. It's a smartphone with Jelly Bean 4.0 on it. And every month you get 200 talk minutes, 500 text messages, and 500 meg of data. And that's it. So you make the one initial $100 investment, and after that you're home free as long as you don't exceed the limits. So my experiences so far, this being the first smartphone that I've had lots of other cell phones, but the first smartphone, is kind of lacking on documentation. So you got to sort of, if you're new to Android and smartphones, you got to sort of stumble your way through a little bit.
Yeah.
And the Sprint network is not the strongest. There's no surprise there. But all in all, for $100...
The best part about that is that, of course, it also has Wi-Fi. And if you turn it on, it will prefer Wi-Fi to the cell network. And so, for example, for updating your apps and all of that stuff, you can do that directly through Wi-Fi whenever you're in range of one,
mm-hmm,
and save yourself the data charges.
Yes, very much, very true. Though I'm learning that there's quite a difference in reach and range when it comes to Wi-Fi versus cellular. So even in my house, things get a little dicey depending where I am. So,
yeah.
So bottom line, I guess, for anyone who's, if they're scotch or cheap like me, and you just cringe at getting into a multi-$100 data plan by every time you turn around, it bears looking at. Though, again, I'm still caught on the horns of, do I keep my AT&T phone where I've got good coverage versus do I trade over to my Sprint network with a cellular, not change my cellular number? I don't know. And then I have a phone that only works some of the time.
You can probably port your number.
No.
No?
No, but they don't. At this time, they do not support it, quote-unquote.
They also have a cellular hotspot router, 2 gigs free a month.
Yeah, but why won't they port numbers? I thought you could port numbers just about to anything.
My guess would be infrastructure, and they don't have the staff and the budget for it.
Right.
I mean, for $100, I mean, the phone is probably worth at least that. They're hoping, from what I'm reading in the Wall Street, is that their run rate right now is about 30-35% of their folks end up choosing a data plan
even though it's low cost, but end up paying something per month to get more data and bandwidth.
The normal free plan is 200 voice minutes and 500 data, but they're running a promotion now where the normal $11 a month plan is the normal one, is unlimited voice, unlimited text, and 500 data.
Yeah,
and
he said, though, the one problem with Sprint, and I've heard this from a lot of folks, so it's not me nor my opinion, but they're complaining that Sprint is very spotty.
Mm-hmm.
That you can be riding around and all of a sudden, boom, cut out. And
they're working on that, but they aren't there yet.
Far from it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I dealt with Sprint when I was with the Big X, and that was our preferred vendor just because of pricing.
Right.
I'm intimately familiar with their coverage problems, but they're generally not bad. But I'm just saying cell phones don't have the strongest antenna sometimes. So.
Well, yeah, right. we don't want to have that antenna sticking up out of our phone. So then they made them retract into the phones, and then we didn't like that either. So now the most phones don't have a visible antenna, and that means you need a much stronger cell signal.
Yep.
You know, I wouldn't mind it, you know, 6-8-inch antenna sticking up if I could get a signal better.
And interestingly, yes, that's a large part of the issue right there. It depends on which way you're facing, is whether the phone is actually blocking the signal. Yesterday I was at a...
you're holding it wrong?
Yes. You're not holding the phone wrong. You're orienting the phone. I was at an internet cafe. Not an internet cafe. I was at a cafe the other day. And I could not get on their wireless for some reason. It wasn't working. So I took out my phone because I still got unlimited data and for now. And I set up my hotspot, and I could not connect. I moved the phone from the left to the right side of the computer. I had a gorgeous signal.
Yep. Well, because your computer's a big EM source.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So now I know which side of that particular Chromebook the antenna's on. But you're right. You're right, Al. The free-to-pop is a pretty neat thing if you're willing to live with a couple of limitations. And the trade-off for that limitation is the whole plan is $100.
Right, because where I'm looking at is where I am now with a family plan of five people on AT&T, you know, about $125 a month for no smartphones.
Right.
If everyone upgrades to smartphones, all of a sudden I'm at $275 a month or $3,000 a year.
Right.
That makes me think twice. So,
it makes me think once, then the thing I think is no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's quite a few of these smaller carriers that usually piggyback on Sprint or T-Mobile, Clearwire and Straight Talk and Freedom Pop and a bunch of them that are offering much lower service than the big carriers. Much lower prices because it's lower service.
Exactly. Hey, one other thought, and it's not totally different topic. You guys are talking about credit fees and et cetera and how the banks are doing the usual of doing a good job of collecting their own money. New service coming up called Dwolla, Dwolla, that's somebody sort of start up their own banking infrastructure that taps into the electronic fund transfer network. You may want to take a look at it. I mean, literally for any small businessman, because they have a no fee on anything under $25 or anything under $10 and a 25-cent fee on beginning after that. So,
and that's 25 cents per transaction.
Right.
So if you send $1,000, the transaction fee is a quarter.
Right. Most of the places is a percent of the total.
Right.
Right, and of course that's why they're hoping to get people. Dwolla, Dwolla.
Yeah, and then they're offering, and I haven't dug into it. I was listening to an NPR report, but they're offering near instantaneous transfers. There's no overnight delays or anything. It's a direct tap into the credit system. So
nice.
Yahoo.
It's only in the United States. Yeah, right. It's only in the United States right now, and I don't know if they have their own swiper.
I don't think they're even bothering. No, they're. You can use a web app.
Right.
And all over. You don't even need a swipe. It's not a card. It's just an email address.
Interesting.
Yeah. So low, very low overhead.
Well, that's what Google Wallet is doing too. You can send money through your Google account with your Google address.
You can now, from the web interface, send money via email.
Yep.
When you are writing a Gmail email, you hit that little attach button, and one of the choices is a dollar sign, and it takes money out of your Google Wallet and sends it to them.
Cool.
Very cool.
Okay.
Thanks,
well,
Al.
Gentlemen, thank you, and have a great Thanksgiving. Overindulge, you have my permission.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, everybody is trying to figure out a way to take a few more bucks out of you. That's, we all know that. While we're waiting for the next caller, here's a great piece of news. Tablets are expected to be one of the hottest gadget gift items for holiday 2013. And Verizon Wireless has a new daily data plan that will get customers hooked up to the company's 4G LTE network for $5 a day. On Thursday, Verizon Wireless announced the introduction of a new $5 a day data plan for customers with tablets and other internet-connected devices, such as the Samsung Galaxy Camera. The new plan will let users connect to Verizon's 4G LTE data network for 24 hours with access up to 300 megabytes worth of data. Customers who sign up will not be charged an activation fee. And if 300 megabytes of data isn't enough, customers can get an alert that will allow them to purchase another 300 megabytes of data for another $5. It's also easy to reactivate the service after a session has expired. Customers can simply go back to their account online after the daily session has expired to sign up again. The way it works for customers who already have a Verizon Wireless SIM card installed in their tablet or device is that when they launch the browser, they automatically get routed to the Verizon Wireless broadband portal. Once on this landing page, they can choose a share everything plan, which lets customers share data among smartphones and other devices, including tablets, requires a monthly contract. But prepay options will also be available, including the new $5 daily plan. Customers who don't have a Verizon Wireless SIM card installed in their device will have to stop by a Verizon Wireless retail location to get one, and a representative will be able to help them activate a data plan of their choosing. Verizon has already been offering prepaid data plans for tablets and other connected devices, but these options offer service for 30 days. The cost is considerably more, $20 for a gig of data, that sort of thing. The new $5 daily service plan is not designed for customers who want access to Verizon's data network all the time. Instead, it's intended for customers who may need LTE services only occasionally when Wi-Fi service is not available. It may also appeal to customers who don't want to pay for daily access to a Wi-Fi network in locations such as hotels. Verizon is not the only wireless operator going after these occasional data users. In October, AT&T announced a similar plan, which also costs $5 a day, but AT&T's plan only offers 250 megabytes of data. So will you take advantage of the $5 a day plan? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. An interesting piece of information.
Yeah. T-Mobile has a plan now. They're targeting the tablets, 200 megs a month for free. And just like you had said, there's Wi-Fi most everywhere, but those occasional times you need cellular, 200 megs a month is pretty decent.
Yeah.
Not for free. And if you need more, you can buy more.
Well, and that's the thing. You can go to so many places nowadays, coffee shops, doctor's office, wherever. And, you know, there's just Wi-Fi all over the place. Matter of fact, you can sit in Strong.
Yeah.
While you're waiting for an appointment there and get free, you know, internet service there. So, you know, it's all over the city. And that's where I tap into it. That's where, you know, I'm on, I forget how many gig. I think we've got 2 gig a month. So we don't even use that much because Kathy does very little. And I do. If I'm going to do any of it, I wind up finding even at work.
Yeah.
I can tap into the Wi-Fi there at work and download stuff. So I'm not even tapping into any of my data plan. So a lot of folks can save that way if they can get into any of the Wi-Fi that's around if they just take the time to do it.
Right.
I know, yeah, you've got the device and, you know, yeah, just quick click on it and go. Eating up your cellular data plan if they're not like you and have unlimited.
Yeah, I'm spoiled.
Yeah, which, you know, they're putting a crunch on. They're eliminating those wherever they can and doing away with it. So,
but I'll tell you, it's it's becoming a connected world. We've still got that dichotomy from everybody wants you to be online all the time, but it costs an awful lot of money to be online all the time. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We seem to have Wayne from Henrietta on the line. We'll get to Wayne right after we take this quick break. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Wayne from Henrietta, New York on the line. Hi, Wayne. What's up?
Hey, hello, guys. Happy snowflakes.
Thanks.
Just kidding, Dave. I just purchased...
Josh isn't, though.
I just purchased the 32-gigabyte version of the Nexus 7.
Yeah.
I haven't even opened the box yet. I took advantage of the pre-Black Friday sale at Best Buy that ends today, $30 off. And mm-hmm. It also came with a $25 Google Play credit.
You'll love it.
Yeah, so do you have a favorite protective case? I'm a big fan of OtterBox, but they do not make one for the 2013 edition of the Nexus 7. They did for the 2012.
Yep.
Yeah, I've got a rubber case
They came from Google.
Yeah, they came from Google. You go right to the Google website, and they've got one. It's a rubberized one, and it's great. It's, you know, protects it very well. You know, it just folds back. You know, you don't have the convenience of a stand part of it, but, you know, just the rubber part of it, just really protecting it. In case it does fall or anything else, screen or anything like that, you know, it's the biggest thing. Because a lot of folks, you know, they drop them and flat down and usually shatter the screen. Well, with this rubber protector on it, it guards against that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. The one I did pick up, but I'm not sure I like it, is it's one that flips open, but it feels like it would flip open and land on the screen. So
yeah, this is a gray rubber. It's a dark gray rubber, and I got it from Google.
Okay. How about screen protector? Is it necessary given third generation Gorilla Glass?
I haven't bothered.
Me neither. No, I put a little water on a rag and can wipe off the fingerprints.
Mm-hmm. One thing though to keep in mind is if you have small children, then it's a good idea to put the screen protector on it because you never know what they're going to rub on the screen.
Yeah,
sure.
But no, you'll love it. I mean, I like reading my books on it. 32 gig, I've filled it up, you know, not even a third of the way. And I use it for so much, you know, stuff, getting my mail. You know, I mean, I've got all my Google Docs on there and the Google Drive. I can listen to my music. I mean, it's just incredible. Nice portable size. I take it to work with me every day. And like I say, in the evenings, I like taking it up and just reading. And then I usually fall asleep, and it goes into sleep mode automatically for me. And the battery lasts for days.
Days.
Wow. That sounds
days.
Great.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care. Stay dry and warm and safe on the roads, everyone.
Enjoy your toy.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah. And most likely the case companies will start making cases for the new model. We see that in the Apple world all the time. When Apple changes the size or shape of a product, it takes a few months for the case companies to catch up. Although in the Apple world, Apple is very secretive about new products, and so most of the case companies don't know the new product until Apple announces it and it ships. But there's always a couple that have products available on announcement day that Apple let them know. But I would expect in the Google market, everybody knew what the shape and dimensions were ahead of time. Mm-hmm. In fact, the new iPad mini with Retina is a third of a millimeter thicker than the iPad mini without Retina. Because it's got a slightly bigger battery to have more power for the Retina screen.
Right.
So that third of a millimeter will affect some of the cases that are super form-fitting. But most of them fit just fine.
All right, I got to ask one question for both of you gentlemen. Black Friday. Are you guys going out or staying in?
I wish I could stay in bed, but I have a retail store.
You're in a retail store. You'll be working. I have a tradition on Black Friday.
Yes?
My alarm clock goes off at 4 a.m. I shut it off, roll over, and sleep till noon.
I like that tradition.
I went out 1 year to buy my daughter a DVD player.
Oh, I remember that. DVD yes.
Player. And that and honestly, that's enough. You can get Black Friday deals starting right now on the web. Why not? I don't have to get out in the cold. Yeah. I don't have to stand in the snow.
In fact, there's a web page that you can go to look at for all the deals.
Well, there's general deal sites. There's Deal Mac and Deal Windows, and there's Black deal Friday. Sites all the time. But yeah, there's Black Friday deals too. Websites.
There's one that lists everything: Target, Best Buy, and you can go select your store, and you can see their whole flyer of what's going to be on sale. For that, I mean, our store, we're opening at 5. And
well, that's one thing we decided at our store is we're gonna open late. It's probably gonna be like 11. Let all the crazy people go to the malls at 4 a.m. We're gonna sleep in.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly right. They're not gonna be at your place if you don't have a doorbuster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're not gonna be busting down your door.
Yeah.
But they're gonna be out and about, and they'll come to you later.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. The other thing that. And again, this is want your opinion.
Yeah.
All right. Thanksgiving Day is still what? Five days away. Days away. Right? All right. I call me old fashioned, but that's when Christmas
starts. Make me an old fashioned.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No, really? But that's when Christmas starts.
Yeah.
Now, granted,
some people started Christmas sales in September.
But yeah. Now,
advertising.
That and I understand posters. And everything else. But where I start to draw the line is lately you go riding around and they already have their darn Christmas lights on outside their houses.
Yeah, their
wait
lights.
A minute. I can see you go the whole month of December and even maybe a couple weeks into January. But seriously, you got to go into November. Turkey Day hasn't even passed yet. Give me a break.
I know. Stop dissing Thanksgiving. It's a beautiful American holiday.
Yeah, you see more and more of it. And
yep. Well, retailers are desperate to get your dollars. So
oh, that I can understand.
They start,
yeah, I mean.
Well, that was the whole point of Black Friday. The name originally meant that it's the day your company finally went in the black and you were making money. Because you operated the whole year in the red, losing money. So I can't lose money for 8 months to hope I make it up in the final two of the year.
That's right.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, but
final
I mean...
Final one.
But
yeah, really.
Final
the last one, yeah. 3 weeks, yeah.
But to be, changing things up so much. I mean, by October, before even Halloween, they're already sneaking out the Christmas wrap and the lights and here and there, everything else. You know what I mean? Heck, most stores are reset by well before Halloween, that all the Christmas decorations are up and you can buy the lights and blah 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 and everything else. Yep. And it's like no.
And then what's a little annoying is that next Saturday is Shop Small Business Day.
Right.
So after everyone has bought everything at the giant box stores and on the internet, yeah, come to buy a little my mom and pop store where we're trying to support our families.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, it interests me that generally, when I go shopping, I find better, more interesting things on the small stores.
Yeah.
Obviously some things, most of the mom and pop stores don't sell. Most of the local computer stores don't sell Chromebooks. So if I want a Chromebook, I'm going to a box store. But if I want extra devices for it, if I want, any kind of additional hardware, that's what
and
local companies do better.
We know that the big stores have have more buying power and more marketing clout. So we intentionally stock smaller items, cooler items. We're always on the lookout for some cool accessory to plug into something.
Yeah, loss leader to get them in the store. And
see, that's a problem. The loss leader means you're losing money on the one thing.
Right.
And hope you make it up on the rest of the things.
Yeah, but
and that's tough.
And often that doesn't happen, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
No, I'm telling. Well, let's look at this. Amazon. Mm-hmm. Here's one of my other stories. Amazon has begun sending out invites to select customers to try out the Kindle Fire HDX and other devices free of charge for 30 days. According to the invite, customers can choose among any of the Kindle Amazon current offerings. including the latest Kindle Paperwhite. And new Kindle Fire HDX and HDX 8.9, Amazon will ship the tablet or e-reader to the customer free of charge, at which point the customer will have 30 days to decide to keep it or not. If it's not sent back, Amazon will charge the customer's credit card. Amazon's always offered a generous 30-day return policy on Kindles, but that consists of an initial credit card charge and a refund when the tablet is returned to Amazon. This program requires no upfront cost to the customer whatsoever. If they don't like it, they just return it, no questions asked. Without a retail store presence of its own, it can be hard for Amazon to get Kindle Fires and other tablets into the hand of consumers to test out before purchasing. The company's already made a move to counter Apple's Genius Bar support system with the, in fact, very innovative Mayday service on the HDX. And now it looks as like it's trying to work around the retail store issue. So does this make you more likely to try a Kindle? Give us a call, 585-960. Oh, no. Don't give us any kind of call. The show is done. Is it... Holy moly, hold that for a week and let us know next week. Holy moly, that was quick. All right, time sure flies when you're, I guess we were having fun. All right, I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I want to thank everybody who called in. We're done. Have a happy, safe, blessed, fun, interesting Thanksgiving. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so you've got some hope there. And we'll be back next Saturday with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.